But a young lad, my mother had a child. The father was around her and said to be quite wild. Left my mama crying, then my daddy left her too. The birth had all but killed her, she called him Baby Blue. Me and my little brother, we were the best of friends. We never had much school, but we'd play and we'd pretend. We were robbing banks and railroads like Frank and Jesse James. Through the fields and forests singing ki-ki, yippee-yippee-yay. All could not be controlled. He all but killed a grown man when he was 12 years old. He jumped a train for Kansas, never even said goodbye. God bless my little baby, I heard my mama cry. For years I heard the stories and I knew that they were true. Of an outlaw in Texas, they called him Baby Blue. Wanted in Montana for killing seven men. A young and reckless bandit with whom the law could not contend. As a sheriff in a quiet southern town, one night the word came to me while I was on my rounds. A band of ruthless gunmen had robbed a yelling man, stole $2,000 and killed an innocent man. I deputized a posse, any man could shoot a gun. When we rode out through the darkness, we numbered 21. We found the trail and tracked up until the break of day, when in some lonesome valley we found their hideaway. We scattered all around and we took them by surprise. Bullets, they were flying and smoke filled the sky. They were deadly with their pistols, but we had them 5-1. The last man, he surrendered and he threw down his gun. I put the shackles on him, but I never met his eye. I threw a man in the jailhouse, he was condemned to die. Never spoke a word, so no one even knew his name. But the people came from all around to see this outlaw hang. Lord, I can't ever tell. When my back was turned upon him, he slipped out of his cell. He stole my horse and pistol, the last thing I heard him say, as he rode out through the darkness, come a kai-kai, yippee-yippee-yay.
That's clawhammer banjo player, guitarist and singer Chris Cool with his own composition, Baby Blue, from his second solo album. It's entitled The Tumbling River and Other Stories, and it's the follow-up to the critically acclaimed Old Dog album from 2010. And the album features 12 songs, that's 8 originals and 4 covers, that share some great stories with a wonderfully rich but spare musical accompaniment that really pays attention to both the mood and allowing each instrument to come into its own. And it's got some fabulous production that really makes you hang on every word and note. And it was recorded with some of the best in the Toronto roots scene. We caught up with Chris Cool at home in Toronto to learn more about the new album. Great to be able to talk to you today. I've really been enjoying this new album, and I have to say I really enjoy all of the projects you're involved with. But this album, you must be pretty proud of it, because it really shows some growth and development as a songwriter.
Oh, thank you very much. I am very proud of it. I feel like it's my strongest work to date, and it's, you know, again, it's getting closer to a sound that I, envision, or that I have been thinking about for a while now, and some experimentation. It's touching on what I've done over the years with the traditional music and stuff, but just exploring a few different sounds and sort of emotions and things like that.
We started off with the track Baby Blue, a wonderful song that has a real old-time feel to it. Wasn't able to play the instrumental that goes before it today. I've played it on this show before, and that's Mayday Number 1, which really sets a great mood for the album, and then you head into Baby Blue. Do you want to talk about why you decided to start off the album this way?
It was definitely like a conscious decision. Now, that tune Mayday, the first tune, me and Andrew Collins wrote that together years, years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And we've always loved it, and both of us have wanted to put it on an album, and it sort of hadn't ever like fit on anything we'd been doing. And so I finally decided to put it on this album. My idea was to get Andrew to play a bunch of mandolins on it and have an arrangement of it that harkened back to Norman and Nancy Blake. They did some albums in like the 80s that were like mandolins orchestras almost. And so we did this version of it with Andrew playing about 5 different types of mandolin, and I'm playing guitar and banjo. We got bowed bass, and we were wanting to get that sound because that was a very influential sound for both me and Andrew. But then I decided it would be nice to bookend the album with the tune, and I wanted to play the tune in a sparser way, and I actually arranged it banjo-wise. It's a very notey tune, and I actually sort of made an arrangement. I tried to take a bunch of the notes out and make it sound more like the way an old man might have played that tune, 70 or 80 years ago. So I sort of really simplified the melody and made the banjo very simple and very sparse, and then overdubbed the bowed bass on top of it to sort of make the two things come together. So, you had the simplicity, a very simple style of banjo playing, and then the bowed bass sort of gave people a hint as to what was going to come in the album as far as textures, because I did sort of allow myself to use some strings and things like that on this album that I hadn't tried before.
Is there any Arnie Naiman influence there as well? I know you and Arnie play banjo a lot together. You also teach and do workshops together. And, he released another great album like yours, My Lucky Stars, recently. I know you even shared a CD release show, but I was curious as to whether there was any influence from playing with people like him.
I produced that album of Arnie's with him. And everything I do is influenced by Arnie Naiman, because he was the first great banjo player I ever met. Clawhammer style player, and nobody's had more of an influence on my playing than him, and we have very similar musical aesthetics I think on a lot of levels. And my first two albums were with him, and so absolutely 100%.
Now we slide from Mayday Number 1 into Baby Blue on the album, which is the track we started off with. I love the note that you added with the one sheet you sent out, which was this: if Doc Boggs and Sergi Leone had a baby, this would be it. Tell us a little bit about this song.
My vision for this album, I'd written a few songs, this being one of them, that were very narrative and like almost in the old ballad style where they're telling a complete story. And this one, I just woke up one morning and I had this inkling of a story in my head, and I started messing around with it, and I set it to an old melody, or my own take on an old melody. That there's a bunch of songs been written with this same melody. There's one called Always Been a Rambler, and there's one called John Johanna, and there's one called The Girl I Left Behind, not to be confused with the fiddle tune, or The Girl I Left Behind. But there's been lots of sort of ballady tunes written with that melody. But I had this story of, you know, two brothers. They go down different roads in their life, but then their roads sort of collide at the end. And I started writing it in the morning, and it was like, okay, this is, first of all, in order to get all this out in an artful manner, no matter what, this is going to be a long song. I'm used to sort of sitting down and writing a song, and, you know, it might take a few hours, but usually it comes pretty quick. But no matter how quick this song came, I don't know, there might be 12 or 13 verses in that song. I knew it was going to take me a long time. So I actually, it was a teaching day. So I had a bunch of students scheduled, and I got into it, and I was like, okay, if I stop writing this song, I could tell something was happening. If I stop this, there's a good chance I'll never write the song. So I, you know, emailed everybody and canceled my lessons for the day, and I spent sort of all day in my living room writing the song. It sort of took all day into the night to sort of get it to be able to tell the story I had in my head in a reasonable, it's still a long song, but, you know, it's not like half an hour long.
Well, a lot of people will be familiar with Sergio Leone, the Italian director, obviously famous for the spaghetti westerns. Tell us a little bit about Doc Boggs, though, because a lot of people who, you know, enjoy banjo but not really as aficionados may not know the influence of Doc Boggs on the instrument and some of the songs.
Yeah, Doc Boggs was a banjo player from Virginia. I think Norton, Virginia is where he was from. He was recorded in the late 20s, I think 1927 were his first recordings. And he was very bluesy. He played a fingerstyle banjo, three-finger style, different from the bluegrass style, but there's some crossovers. And his playing and especially his singing was very bluesy. And so I consider him a country blues musician. And he recorded for Brunswick and a few other labels, and then sort of went into obscurity. I think he became a coal miner and never played for years and years. And some point in the 50s or early 60s, Mike Seeger, you know, who'd heard these old recordings, there's a couple of his recordings are on the Anthology of American Folk Music that Harry Smith put out. So they were known, and Mike Seeger hunted him down, which Mike Seeger did that for a lot of people who were like, I mean, there was a lot of people doing that then, but like hunted him down and found him still living in Virginia. And I don't think he played much banjo in the in-between years. Maybe he'd raised a family and whatnot, but Mike Seeger sort of brought him out of retirement, and they recorded some new sides for Folkways in the 60s, and he ended up getting out and touring around. So I even think he may have been up to one of the early Mariposas, Doc Boggs, and, you know, Newport Folk Festival and stuff like that, and sort of had a second career later on in his life. But very, very influential. It's probably his most famous tune is Country Blues, which I recorded on my first album with Arnie 20 years ago. And I used his finger style on definitely like his style of finger style playing on the banjo on this tune, and specifically a tuning that he used, or sort of a weird banjo tuning. He played Oh Death. Oh Death is probably Ralph Stanley sang on the Brother Where Art Thou. So it's the same tuning that Doc Boggs played Oh Death in.
You know, the neat thing, I have to say, the neat thing about doing these interviews is you learn so much more than just, hey, that's a good song, especially with a musical form like this, you know, particularly when you're talking about Appalachian banjo. You mentioned how the melodies, a lot of the melodies are similar for a lot of songs, that they kept being brought back. And I suppose it's a reverence to the source material, isn't it, that it will be adapted into another song.
Yeah, I have no problem. I have no problem with doing it. It's funny because I had a video of that tune, or somebody had taken a video of me playing it at one point, and it was up, and somebody sort of called me out on that, like, oh, this is, you took the melody from this tune, almost like accusing me of stealing. And I was like, then I listed all the other tunes that also had the exact same melody. I was like, oh, it's just, you know, this is just what happens. You know, you use it. They're great tunes, and they're out there for everybody to use. Probably my favorite songwriter next to Bob Dylan would be John Hartford, who was a great banjo player, and he did that all the time. He loved fiddle music and loved you know, traditional old-time music. So he would take the fiddle tunes and just put words to them. And some of his greatest songs, in fact, the song that I recorded on Old Dog, which is called I Wish We Had Our Time Again, which is a beautiful, beautiful tune that, that Hartford wrote. But the original is a fiddle tune called I Wish We Had Our Time Again, fiddle and banjo tune.
The fascinating thing about this album, and I want to compliment you at this point, is the way that you have sequenced these songs to have a wonderful start. And I'm going to pick the third song when we take a break. The phenomenal Olabella Reed song, Led Me to the Wrong, which features the incredible vocals of Christine Schmidt, who is obviously very familiar with you because she sings with you with the Lonesome Ace String Band. Tell us a little bit about this song, and then let's listen to it.
Yeah, well, this is a tune, actually, for me that goes way, way back when I was first getting into this type of music. I used to listen to Steve Pritchard's show, which at the time was on CKLN, but now is on CIUT. But it's been going for, well, at least, I bet, 25 years or so. But I would listen to it, and I had a tape recorder, old, you know, tape deck in my room. And this would have been in the late 80s, probably around 89 or 90, I guess. And I remember this song coming on. If I heard something, especially if I heard some clawhammer banjo, I would always record them because it was hard to find music for me at that time. And I remember this song coming on and the banjo coming in and running over and pressing record and listening to the song over and over. And it was Led Me to the Wrong. It was the first Olabelle Reed song I ever heard. Olabelle Reed was a great singer and banjo player, but especially a great songwriter. She wrote songs in the old style, which you'd swear were ancient, but they're not. She just had absorbed the music so well that she could write in that style. And she was originally from North Carolina, but ended up living in Maryland, ran a country music park in Sunset, Maryland for years and years. Wrote some of her famous songs are High on a Mountain, which has been recorded lots of times over the years. And I've always loved this song. I always loved singing with Christine. Christine's sort of like my secret weapon. I used her a lot on Old Dog, and she's just one of my all-time favorite singers, bar anything. I'm not talking about my favorite singers that I know. She's just one of my favorite singers and great songwriter. So yeah, Christine isn't in Lonesome Ace String Band, but we're sort of, whenever we can make it work, we're sort of, Lonesome Ace is her backup band, and we made the album with her, and I produced her album. Her new album, and she's just one of my great friends, and I admire her talent so much.
That's right. We should mention that Christine's new album, and it's her debut long player, is entitled Good Dirt. We have played tracks from that on this show, and it's a fabulous album, definitely worth checking out. So let's listen to that just now. This is Chris Cool from the album The Tumbling River, and this is Led Me to the Wrong, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Oh, Lordy me. Oh, Lordy, my honey, you led me to the wrong. People are born with silver and gold. Others have husbands and wives. I never had a thing in this whole wide wicked world. Now I'm losing my life. Now I'm losing my life. You promised me that we would be wed. On this I laid my money down. You were seen according my best friend. Caused me to shoot him down. You caused me to shoot him down. woman is bitter but sweet. Even though she turns him down, the price I have to pay will come to you someday. And you'll in a sea of sorrow drown. And you'll in a sea of sorrow drown. They say I have a right to my very last few words before they pull that scaffold down. A man has to fight for what he knows is right, even if it puts him in the ground. Even if it puts him in the ground. Now they're gonna put me in the ground. Oh, Lordy me. Oh, Lordy my. Honey, you led me to the wrong.
That's Chris Cool with Led Me to the Wrong from his new album. It's his second solo album entitled The Tumbling River and Other Stories. It's a fantastic album with some wonderful storytelling and beautiful instrumentation on it. Chris is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. You produced this album with some wonderful roots players in Toronto, and I thought it'd be good if you could just give us a rundown of who plays on the album, and then let's talk a little bit about how you actually went about recording it.
So I've got some... I'm very lucky to live in Toronto because there's so many great players, and I've lived in Toronto my whole life. I've never lived anywhere else. So I've been here for 43 years now, and I've been a part of the music community for a long time. So I've got a lot of my great friends are here, and they also happen to be musicians. So I play with some of them. I can never get all of them on an album, and sometimes I feel a little bad about that. But it's more, you know, you're making the album. You're not sort of showcasing everyone you know who can play. But on this particular album, I used John Showman on one tune, who's one of my great friends who I play in a few bands with. On the tune, I Know Your Wandering Heart, I had envisioned something between a string section and an old time band. So I got him to arrange strings. Some points in that tune, he's overdubbing himself six times on the one tune. And he did an amazing job with that. I got Brian Kobayakawa, who's a wonderful bass player, plays with Serena Ryder, and I've known him for years and years, to do a bunch of bowed bass on the album. Andrew Collins, who recorded the album and mixed it, he plays mandolin on a couple tracks. Of course, Christine sings. And my other friend, who's another one of my favorite singers in town, Simone Schmidt, who used to play in the band $100 and plays in the band Fiverr now, she sings on a couple tunes as well on Ruben's Train and Stone Walls and Steel Bars. And of course, I always like to get Burt Carroll on any album I make playing steel. So he plays steel on a couple tunes, including the title track. And then I got my buddy Ivan Rosenberg to do a gourd banjo and dobro duet with me. And I think that's everybody who played on the album. And some of the tunes, I made this album... You know, sometimes I would record, like, for instance, the title track, Tumbling River. I recorded it. I believe in the power of sparseness in music. And so you can add things, but the more you add, if you're not careful, you can take away from the power and especially take away from your communication potential. So the less you can put on a song, I think the more the people are going to follow the words and follow the story. And because this album had some songs that were sort of long stories, it was sort of important to me that people don't drift off after the first verse. So a lot of times, like for instance, the title track, I recorded it just voice and banjo. And I knew I might put more stuff on, but I wanted to hear what it sounded like with just the voice and the banjo, and that's the way I would perform the tune most of the time. But I got it, and I thought, okay, well, it would be interesting. We had Birkin to play steel on one of the country, more country songs. Said, let's get him to play some steel and do more atmospheric, so not traditional style steel. So we got him to play over the whole tune a few times and over the existing track. And then we ended up going through what he'd played and carving out spots. So he played on the whole thing, but then we made him, you know, through the miracle of editing, we took him out, made him come in at certain spots, and it sounded good, but it still didn't sound full enough. So when I had Brian in, I thought, well, maybe we could get some bowed bass just to sort of fill it all out on the bottom end. So Brian was working with listening to me and Burke play. Burke could only hear me play. He never knew that Brian was going to be playing bowed bass on it eventually. So yeah, we put the bowed bass on and then sort of again sort of edited it so it was like the bowed bass wasn't all the way through. It was sort of coming in here and there and doing different things. And at by that point, when Brian came in, I had a specific ideas of when I wanted the bass playing and what I wanted it to play. And yeah, and then we had the track, and that track is exactly, you know, what I'd envisioned. I was so very happy with the way all the instruments came together on that track. It was sort of like a dream, and I hope to sort of be able to do more recording like that with that vibe.
Let's play that track now. This is the title track from Chris Cool's new album. It's entitled The Tumbling River, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
While wandering about first morning light, still high from the whiskey of the last night, with no destination, unfit to go home, by the tumbling river I started to roam. All the birds in the forest singing their song, and the sun in the pine tree seemed to ease me along, touching my spirit, which had fallen so low, trapped in a darkness 6 months before. I sat down by the river and started to think of the path I had taken, led me to the brink of loved ones forsaken and bridges well burned, of loneliness chosen and lessons unlearned. By name, life and destruction right then seemed the same. I called out the question, no answer there came. But then the birds in the forest sang the sweetest refrain. All the sun started shining, whole world to go, sparkled on the water with a beauty untold, so that no man or creature could dare feel alone. I bowed down my head and I turned to go home. It's oft times through the years I've remembered that day. I thought and I wonder, but still I can't say. Was it mother or father who reached down a hand by the tumbling river to a stumbling man?
That's Chris Cool with The Tumbling River, the title track from his new album. It's his second solo album, where Chris is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. And you know, you were talking just before that, the way that you built these songs. And I have to say, sitting here listening to you talk about the painstaking way it sounds to me that you actually put an album like this together. Is that your typical way of working, that you like to try and, you know, particularly when you're working on your solo stuff, to try and bring things together so you get just about the right amount of bowed bass or the right amount of dobro added to a particular song?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a specific way, and it depends on the project. On this album and Old Dog, I was sort of allowing myself to approach them more on almost with a bit of a pop sensibility, although I know it doesn't sound like pop music, but allowing myself the tools of, okay, if I want to, you know, pad a certain section of a song or add something, I'm going to do it and I'm going to overdub. Now, I generally like to record live. So, I mean, all my vocals are recorded live on this. So I like to play and sing at the same time, at least. Now, when we do the Lonesome Ace albums and on Christine's album, everything's just recorded live. We're all together and playing live. In fact, the first Lonesome Ace album is all completely live. There's no editing, no overdubbing, nothing except live tracks on the whole album, and then the new one that's coming out is almost the same. It just depends on the music. So different recording techniques are just like tools, and if you can learn how to use some different tools, different ones are going to be good for different situations. So on when I'm recording a solo album like this that might be a slightly more atmospheric, I'm going to use some different recording techniques like overdubbing and edit with maybe more of a fine magnifying glass to the whole situation. Whereas if I'm recording an old-time album, I want it to feel live and real. So if I can, I'm going to record everyone live in one room with lots of bleed going from every microphone. And I like it to sound just like a high-end tape recording of a jam session. So it just depends on the project.
Can we talk about how your solo projects fit in with everything else you do? I think you've been involved in the production of, I think, 150 plus albums, play with David Francie a lot. You obviously have your regular combo, the Foggy Hogtown Boys, and then you play as a duo with Ivan Rosenberg. How do you weave everything together?
Well, I mean, I'm just a blue-collar musician, and that just means I got to do whatever I can to survive. So I've always just had lots of projects going, and I like playing. You know, I like everybody I play with, so I want to play with all those people, and I want to spend time with all those people. When I go out with David Francie for, you know, 3 or 4 months straight, that exposes me to people, to an audience, where if they happen to see that the Lonesome Ace String Band or the Foggies are playing, and they're like, oh yeah, I recognize that guy. I saw that guy with David Francie. And likewise, when I'm out with the Foggies, people will come and see David Francie and might see me playing with him and say, hey, that's the guy who, you know, I saw playing banjo with this band or that band. And so ultimately, although it doesn't allow you to focus on one project, I mean, I think it's a real healthy way, because it allows you a lot of artistic expression and to explore sort of your different sides as an artist. And it allows you to be exposed to a lot of different audiences that if you were just playing in one unit and putting all your energy into that, you wouldn't be able to. And of course, I mean, there's the whole thing about not putting all your eggs in one basket. I mean, I've seen so many people who have like just dumped all their energy into one project, and then something happens, like one of the members gets married and has a baby and can't tour anymore, and then all of a sudden those like 3 or 4 years of hard work are sort of out the window a little bit, and you're starting from scratch. Whereas I've always found it better to just sort of have a bunch of different things, and all of them sort of ebb and flow a little bit.
Well, I've got to say, from the point of view of the listener, one of the things I love is the fact that if I see your name on an album, it's something that I'm going to definitely want to pick up and have a listen to, because you are obviously not just very creative, but also very productive and involved in some great projects. So I definitely want to thank you for that. If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
I guess they could go to my website, which is just chriscool.com. And, you know, if they have any specific questions, they feel free to drop me a line. I get the email that comes off the website. So.
And what about future plans? Obviously, touring. I know you've just been out on the road with David Francie. What have you got coming up over the next few months?
Got a new album coming out with The Lonesome Ace in September. That's coming out September 17th, I believe. I'm just about to go away to teach some camps, one in Saskatchewan and then 2 weeks in BC for till the end of the summer. And we're going to be at the Lonesome Ace and Christine Schmidt are going to be at the Shelter Valley Folk Festival on Labor Day weekend. And then, you know, just playing around Toronto for the fall and the spring. I play, if you're ever in Toronto, I play every Sunday if I'm in town at a place called The Local. I do a solo show, and I'm often down at the Dakota Tavern on Saturday and Sundays doing the Bluegrass Brunch. And yeah, so just check my website. I put all my gigs up there.
Just keeping busy. It's been great to chat with you today. I thought we'd squeeze in one more track from the album, and I thought it would be nice to finish with a little bit of a gospel song. And the one I picked is Beautiful Life. Can you tell us about that one?
Well, this tune sort of speaks for itself. It's just, I think, a great sentiment and a really nice, not too heavy-handed gospel song that I can, even though I'm not a devout anything, I can really stand behind the message of this song.
Well, I got to say, you sing pretty good as well. So, Chris Cool, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. This is Chris Cool from the new album, The Tumbling River, and this is Beautiful Life. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. And thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Jan.
Each day I'll do golden deed by helping those who are in need. My life on earth is but a span, and so I'll do the best I can.
Life's evening sun,
life's evening sun,
is sinking low,
is sinking low.
A few more days and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. I'll help someone in time of need and journey on with rapid speed. I'll help the sick, the poor and weak, and words of kindness to them speak.
Life's evening sun,
life's evening sun,
is sinking low,
is sinking low.
A few more days and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. Traveling down last weary road, I'll try to lift some traveler's load. I'll try to turn the night to day, make flowers bloom along the way.
Life's evening sun,
life's evening sun,
is sinking low,
is sinking low.
A few more days and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun.